Well, please turn in your Bibles to Proverbs 24. Proverbs 24, found on page 672 in the Pew Bible. Proverbs 24, this message will be the first of several topical surveys that we will do with the rest of the book of Proverbs, taking the whole book and seeing what it says about different topics, issues that we'll cover in the weeks to come. But this morning we start in Proverbs 24, page 672, and for now I'm just going to read verses 30 to 32. Proverbs 24, verses 30 to 32. I passed by the field of the sluggard, and by the vineyard of the man lacking a heart of wisdom, and behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Nettles had covered its surface, and its stone wall has been torn down. And I beheld, I set my heart upon it, I saw, I received discipline. This morning we do return to our series of Proverbs, and so far we've made our way verse by verse through the first 9 chapters. For the rest of the book of Proverbs, rather than going 10 to 31 verse by verse like we do with other sections of Scripture, we're going to take topics and see what the whole book has to address on us, and that way kind of pluck our way through what the rest of the book has for us. Now, as I put this together, not only am I having to decide which topics we'll do, we're not going to exhaust every topic in Proverbs, but I especially had to start out with choosing one to begin with, which topic in the book of Proverbs we're going to cover first. And so the decision was pretty easy to make. I looked at the calendar, saw that this is the last Lord's Day we have until the new year. And so the choice was obvious to me. In about 14 hours, we will enter into the new year. Tonight, when the clock strikes midnight, we'll wake up. And a lot of people use that as the time in their life to make new commitments, make better goals. They'll look at the previous year and think, where do I want to improve this year? And they'll give themselves to that kind of work in the coming year. So I thought of all the topics we could cover, the most helpful and appropriate for a time such as this would be this idea of the sluggard, this idea of diligence and laziness. I do hope that you will hear what's said this morning and receive God's intended goal for it. That is to give you wisdom for your own life, not just for the next calendar year, but literally for the rest of your life. Biblical wisdom, if you'll remember, is defined as skill. We narrowed it down to biblical wisdom as skill at living in the fear of Yahweh. And so what we're trying to do is go through the book of Proverbs and pick up skill for these things. That's why you'll find the titles skill for blank this morning is labor, leisure, and laziness. Skill for labor, leisure, and laziness. 3 areas we desperately need help with as humans, but we need help as fallen humans, and I would add especially in this current generation of fallen humans. We live in a society where it is completely acceptable, even expected, to have a horrible view of work. We live in a people, among a people, that literally expects something for nothing. Laziness is no longer shameful. It used to be, but not anymore in America, it seems like. Students expect to get A's just for existing. Employees expect raises just because they didn't quit. There's an entitlement that plagues our society. It stretches across multiple generations. We can blame it on any one generation we want to, but laziness is a fallen human problem, not specifically nailed down to one generation. And this morning, you'll see that it's a problem that ignores the Bible's teaching on the sluggard. Again, I'll admit, I get the humor in a bumper sticker like, you know, a bad day of fishing is better than a good day at the office or whatever it is. I get why that makes people chuckle, but you also have to realize the poisonous worldview that's in that kind of a statement. It exposes our elevation of rest and recreation above labor. If we were honest, we would love if God had reversed his days of the week, right? 6 days you shall labor, 1 you shall rest. We would have loved if he would have said 6 days you rest and 1 day you labor. Better if he just said, just rest. We really wish that some version of the Bible would come out where Adam and Eve were put in the garden for vacation, not for work. And it shows that we have a problem with work. Our society would love it. Our flesh would love if the Bible condemned work. Because at some point in your life, to some degree, somewhere you are a sluggard. It may not be easily seen by others. It may not be in the areas other people around you are sluggish, but there's some aspect of your life where you can still learn from the sluggard. As you'll see this morning, this is ultimately a problem with your fear of God. The fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom. And as you learn from Proverbs, the wise are diligent. So if I'm being sluggish and lazy, then I'm being a fool, which is tied to my lack of fear in God like I'm supposed to. So we have to be convinced that this is a big deal. If you were to take polls, and even in our own church, if you just said, name the five biggest sins you can think of, I'm not sure laziness would top some of our lists. But in the Bible, God makes it clear that He hates the sluggard. We have to be convinced of His view of the sluggard. In fact, when you think about reasons you should avoid other humans, if you think about that, if I said, Christian, you should avoid the person who struggles with blank or deals with blank, we would fill that blank in all kinds of ways besides what you just heard earlier read in 2 Thessalonians 3. Paul commands that Christians stay away from those claiming to love Christ while being lazy. I don't know if you've ever heard of a church disciplining someone for being lazy, but it is biblical. Paul warns about associating with people professing to be Christian, but who live with their favorite word being tomorrow. He warns about those who think they can honor the Lord while ignoring Him and the work in their life. See, one of the roots of our problem with laziness can be found in this harmful idea that so drastically divides what we call secular and spiritual. So many of us and so many of you in your life have been tempted to think the work that I do is spiritual, but the work you do is not. You know, preaching a sermon is a spiritual thing, but running new wires in a house is not really all that spiritual. Leading a Bible study, spiritual work. Teaching eighth grade math, secular. That kind of divide is killing the Christian work ethic. In a helpful summary, Paul Helm said it this way. He said, Christians have become accustomed to think of themselves as having a spiritual life, which is sharply distinct from everyday life in the family, work, and leisure. A spiritual life is a life of prayer and watchfulness, of Bible reading and church going. As a result of this distortion, instead of the Christian life being thought of as an integrated whole, it is artificially broken up into compartments, which have little or nothing to do with each other. It is as if the Christian responsibility ceases at the church porch, as if the Christian gospel has nothing to do with the pavement outside and the roads and motorways beyond. That's a helpful summary to see part of the problem we're dealing with. It's a way that we've chosen to block out verses like 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether then you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Colossians 3:23, whatever you do your work heartily as for the Lord rather than men. We leave those verses out of our thinking on Monday to Saturday. We think it involves spiritual work only and not just normal work. And so we've got to come back to a biblical worldview where we see work as more than employment. You've got to see work involving more than what you're hired to do, what you're paid to do. This is why I brace myself every time I hear a stay-at-home mom asked, do you work? And it's like, I dare you to say no. It's like, I just scoot over a little bit and just wait on the answer to come. Of course they work if they're a good stay-at-home mom. Because work is more than employment. That's what I'm trying to get you to see. One resource I found defined work this way. This is so helpful. It'll help you as we go through this whole section this morning. Work is any set of tasks to be performed in pursuit of a particular goal. Work is any set of tasks to be performed in pursuit of a particular goal. So yes, I want to be clear. Proverbs squarely focuses and applies to vocational work, work as a means of getting your necessities in life. But what it teaches in that will help you for diligence in all areas of life. So you'll do well to think about more than your vocation. You'll need to consider physical laziness, mental laziness, spiritual laziness. Learn to see how the sluggard will expose things like relational laziness, emotional laziness, what I'll call ecclesiastical laziness, laziness with church, parental laziness, marital laziness. In other words, see what God says about labor and wisdom, fearing Him, what He says about leisure, what He says about laziness, and learn to apply it in everything you do, remembering 1 Corinthians 10:31 and Colossians 3:23, everything is to be done to the glory of God. Now again, if you are still in Proverbs chapter 24, you'll remember we read verses 30 to 32, but look at verse 32 before we get going on this blazing race, I will tell you ahead of time. Look at verse 32. And I beheld, I set my heart upon it, I saw, I received discipline. Notice four things there that this guy looking at the sluggard's field does. Beheld it, set it upon my heart, saw it, received discipline. This is what we want to do this morning as we look at the sluggard throughout the whole book of Proverbs. We want to look at what the sluggard shows us not to do and what the sluggard shows us to do. We want to observe the sluggard. That'll be our first main point this morning, observing the sluggard. And what I did was I broke it down in 9 marks of a sluggard, which you expect that to be filled in with of a healthy church. 9 marks of a sluggard is where we're going this morning. What I did was this shows you how the hot dog's made, right? I searched for the word sluggard in the book of Proverbs. I found 14. And I said, hey, they look like they're in 9 categories. Here we go. I'll also warn you that there are more things we could say about the sluggard in the Bible, but we're specifically focused on Proverbs this morning. And I'll also tell you, don't be lazy and flipping, because we're going to be doing a lot of flipping this morning. But the good news is, it's all in the book of Proverbs. So if you just find the book of Proverbs, just flip around in there the whole morning, and you'll be fine. But let's get going with this. Observing the sluggard. Mark number 1, the sluggard wastes opportunities. The sluggard wastes opportunities. And since you're in chapter 24, I thought we would just start there. Look at verse 30. I passed by the field of the sluggard, by the vineyard of the man lacking a heart of wisdom, and behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Nettles had covered its surface, and its stone wall has been torn down. So what you see here is a man who has a field, he has a vineyard, but it's in shambles. It's not in shambles because it's been abandoned, as if no one's there. It's in shambles because the one who is there isn't taking care of it. The person who owns the field is present, but they're a sluggard. They lack a heart of wisdom, the passage says, and it shows up because their vineyard's a mess. It's completely overgrown. It's deteriorating, showing us that one of the marks of a sluggard is that they will waste the opportunities they do have. The man does have a field. The man does have a vineyard. He does have a wall. Those are good gifts. Those are good things to have. They have a lot of potential to be profitable and beneficial, but due to his neglect, they're ruined. It's a general picture that we can learn to apply to all our God-given opportunities in life. I mean, obviously, you can think about your literal house, right? Your yard. Reflect on, does my yard reflect the Lord's glory? Again, I'm not saying Christians can only live in mansions. That's not the point. I'm not saying you have to have the best lawn care in the whole world. That's not at all what I'm getting at. But there is a neglect where the person obviously doesn't fear the Lord. The reason I say that is because that's what this whole proverb is based on. Look at the guy's field. You know he's a sluggard. So we can think about our own possessions in life. This proverb is trying to teach us, trying to teach the son, all of us, to fear the Lord in such a real way that it affects how we take care of vineyards. Fear the Lord in a way that it changes the way you cut grass or mow the lawn, as y'all are supposed to say, but it's cut grass. I don't get hair mows. I get haircuts, but it's another story. Just imagine for a second, if you walk by this vineyard, walls torn down, thorns everywhere, it's just a mess. And there's a sign planted out front, proud member of Cornerstone Bible Church. I mean, everything in you would want to go take that sign down. Think how embarrassing that would be. And it's not due to the person having some physical disability they can't take care of it. It's due to sheer laziness. What I'm wanting you to see is what Proverbs is wanting you to see. What an embarrassment that is to someone who's made in the image of God. To have their stuff, their opportunities in life just waste away and then bear God's image in that. This is what Proverbs is trying to show us. But again, like I said in the introduction, this can be applied to all sorts of things in life. You also need to think of how you're stewarding things like your marriage or the kids you've been entrusted with, the vehicles you've been entrusted with, the days you've been entrusted with. You're a steward, is what the Bible teaches us. Think through your life, all of it, and look for this kind of image. Where do I have this messy, unkept, disastrous vineyard? What is it that through sinful neglect I've allowed to deteriorate and crumble? What resources or opportunities am I wasting that could otherwise be used for good, profitable, and even glorious means? I thought about asking it this way. What is it that I'm hoping the Lord won't bring up on Judgment Day? What part of my life am I hoping He'll overlook like I am? Think through these things. Think through all aspects of your life. And think about what gift has God given you? What opportunity is before you that I've neglected my stewardship of? Don't let these God-given opportunities waste away due to sinful neglect and laziness. That is not a mark of a God-fearer. It's a mark of a sluggard. It's our first one. Secondly, second mark of a sluggard is the sluggard suffers from 1,000 littles, which sounds odd, but it'll make sense in a second. The sluggard suffers from 1,000 littles. Look at verse 33. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then your poverty will come as a robber and your want like an armed man. Again, threefold repetition of a little, a little, a little, a little. It's the sluggard's way of not suffering because he just quit everything all at once. He's suffering not due to some one-time terrible giant decision. He's suffering because all his littles add up. He's getting a lot of little paper cuts that eventually bleed him out. You think about one little decision as not being a big deal. That's typically the way we live our lives. But what you see here is a bunch of littles pile up and ruin his whole vineyard. Even your big decisions, like who you marry, is made up of countless little decisions through your life. Your life is the culmination of a bunch of little decisions. And so little by little, this sluggard slides into poverty and want by neglecting little things. Look back at Proverbs 6. Go back to Proverbs 6, you'll see the same thing. A lot of the Proverbs on the sluggard are repeated, which is helpful because not all of us get the message the first time. But look back at Proverbs 6, and you'll see the same language. Verse 9, how long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Again, you see the sluggard neglecting and wasting these littles is what I'm trying to show you. When he's confronted with getting up and going to tackle responsibilities for the day, he won't just come out, some of us will, but he won't just come out and say, leave me alone, I'm not doing that today. He's saying, I'll do it later. I'll get up later. This is how he lives his life. He doesn't ask for the whole day off, he just asks to come in late. These littles pile up and they end up ruining him. There was a helpful article I read on Desiring God about this issue of laziness, and here's a quote that I pulled from it. A little, it turns out, is anything but, at least when joined to 1,000 other littles. Many little raindrops make a lake. Many little chops fall a tree. And therefore, how we handle little temptations, little decisions, little opportunities of self-denial matters a lot. That is such a helpful and necessary way for you to start tackling this issue of being a sluggard. It shows you that, see, our natural, and I say ours, I'll just tell you mine. When I start seeing these littles pile up and I got a big problem now, my first reaction is, what big thing can I do to fix this? I haven't read my Bible June through August. I'm going to dedicate 8 hours tomorrow to reading my Bible. That would be like saying, I haven't eaten a good meal in 2 months, so tomorrow I'm going to eat 15 pounds of whatever's healthy. So look, that's not the way you're meant to digest stuff. You don't counter these wasted littles by doing some great, huge thing all of a sudden. You counter it by doing the littles the right way. You counter all the wasted littles by being a steward of the littles. Little changes, like what time you go to bed. Do you hit your snooze button? Change what time you leave for work. You change these little things that individually are little things, but collectively will add up and be major things. That's what we're seeing from the sluggard. If you remember his ruined field in chapter 24, you think about how little the weeds are when they begin. They're not really a problem. When they're little, just go out and do the little work of pulling them. That just takes a little bit of a pluck with a lot of weeds. But when you neglect those little weeds, little by little, they grow into large weeds. And little by little, you get into a huge problem. So learn from the sluggard to redeem the little things in life. That is much better than random acts of greatness. The sluggard wastes his opportunities. He suffers from 1,000 littles. Mark number 3, the sluggard lacks initiative. You're in chapter 6. Stay there with me. Go to verse 6. The sluggard lacks initiative. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief, officer, or ruler, prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. So the father tells the sluggard here to go to the ant. And notice what's commendable about the ant reveals what's problematic with the sluggard. The ant is told to go study the ant. Why? Well, because the ant doesn't need a chief, an officer, or a ruler. The ant has initiative. The ant doesn't need someone to tell her to get up for work. The ant doesn't tell her work needs to be done or have someone tell her that. The ant was created to work, so the ant works. The ant has initiative, we see here in Proverbs 6. So much initiative that even in the summer, she's laboring away for things she won't need until winter. The ant doesn't need someone to point her to the future of her life. She knows what her responsibilities are. She knows what the needs will be in the future, and she takes care of them today. So again, think through your own life. Where am I being more sluggish than ant-like? Do I have this kind of drive in life? Do I initiate the right kind of things in my life? Or like the sluggard, do I depend on other people to point out what I need to be doing? Do I wait on others to say, go do this before I go do that? Do I need others to remind me of not just what needs to be done, but when it needs to be done? To be even more practical, do you find yourself needing others to keep your calendar for you? Do you miss things and then blame it? Well, you didn't call me and remind me it was there. Do you need other people to be your alarm clock? These are the kind of things we have to start thinking through. What we see in the sluggard here is that they don't start things on their own, at least not the right things. They don't look ahead in life. In other words, the sluggard lacks initiative. But I will say sometimes, for various reasons, the sluggard will start something, which brings us to our fourth mark, the sluggard fails to finish. So the sluggard struggles to start the right things, but sometimes things get started. And what we learn with mark number 4 is the sluggard fails to finish. Go over to chapter 26 again. Chapter 26, we will see the sluggard fails to finish. Again, there's a lot of Proverbs to talk about with this. I just try to pick a representative one and move on. Proverbs chapter 26, verse 15. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He is too weary to return it to his mouth. Now, the same thing was repeated back in 1924. You can write that down. The difference is in 1924, he simply wouldn't bring his hand out of the bowl. And 26:15, he's too weary to do it. So whereas he wouldn't do it before, now he can't do it because he's just so tired. It's a comical way. We laugh at this, and we're meant to. It's a funny picture of just how lazy this sluggard is. In one sense, you can say the sluggard's hungry enough to put his hand in the bowl. Now, again, in their culture, they ate with their hands a lot more. This is not a problem. But he's hungry enough to put his hand in the bowl, but he's lazy enough to keep it there. That's the picture that's being set up. His hand goes in the bowl because he knows he needs food, but he also knows he loves rest, and so his hand stays in the bowl. He doesn't finish what he needs to. And again, as hard as this is to believe, notice what Proverbs is teaching you, that when it comes to the sluggard, laziness is more important than food. This excessive rest is more desired than nutrition. Again, we need to be sure to recognize the sluggard doesn't like being hungry. That's not the claim. The claim's not you leave your hand in the bowl because you love being hungry. The claim is you hate being hungry, but you know what you hate more than being hungry? You hate working more than being hungry. And that's proven because you won't even pull your hand out of the bowl. So you may hate hunger. You may hate the lack of nutrition, but you don't hate it enough to do something about it. So your hand stays in the bowl because the one thing you hate more than hunger is the work it takes to satisfy hunger. This is what we're seeing with this sluggard. This is so helpful for us to even examine for ourselves. You think of all the unfinished projects you have in your life. You think of all the unfinished books, all the unfinished studies, all the unfinished classes, all the unfinished conversations. So many things that we start but hardly ever complete. That is a mark of a sluggard biblically. Now again, there are wise times sometimes to abandon certain things. That's not what I'm getting at. But what we see here is someone who's doing it due to laziness, someone who's doing it because they're a sluggard. And again, you got to remember this applies to our work, which is more than our vocation. It directly focuses on that, but it does more than that. And so I thought about a few examples. One of them that I thought would be worth mentioning is I've worked in a church since 07, so 16 years. One of the things I've noticed that cripples a lot of people is what I'll just call relational laziness. So these people, they'll go to church, they're there for a long time to visit, or maybe they're there to join and they join a church. That's not the distinction I'm looking for. But at some point they feel lazy. They don't feel included. I don't feel like I'm getting invited to things. And so they'll say things like, no one talks to me. And so you ask back, well, who did you talk to? And it's offensive. Like, wait. No, I'm here to tell you no one talked to me. I'm not here to tell you I didn't talk to anybody. It's as if we expect others to treat us better than we'll treat them. Or as if people in church that I go to have responsibilities to me that I don't have to them. This is the attitude that comes out. And I think it's a helpful picture in Proverbs to say that's like the sluggard who puts his hand in the bowl but doesn't lift it out. I care enough about my loneliness. I hate it enough to say something about it. But you know what I hate more than loneliness? I hate doing the relational work it takes to not be lonely anymore. This is some of the ways this can apply. Relationships are hard. Relationships take work. It is hard work to focus on other people and not ourselves. It is hard work to ask people questions about them rather than turning everything towards ourselves or even just keeping the conversation on them to truly understand more about them and their life. It's hard to do that. It's hard to step out and say hey to people that you don't know. I get it. But again, like a field, if you don't work on and maintain relationships, they will grow over and get ruined. So we need to learn that laziness applies in all sorts of areas of life, especially these kind of relational aspects. That is, again, just one application. You can do the same with Bible study or school or any conversation you're supposed to have. Whatever it is, all of life is meant to be done to the glory of God, and so therefore, we've got to fight laziness in all areas of our life. The sluggard, if you'll notice, was lacking nutrition, but it was not because he had no opportunity for nutrition. He lacked nutrition because he lacked the effort that it takes to get nutrition. So again, think through your life and ask God, God, where is it that I am lacking something I want and should want? But where is my lack due to my lack of effort? Again, before we leave this passage, I want to point out to you, just above is another reference to the sluggard's sleep. We've seen that already with a little sleep, a little slumber. But this time, it's not just his desire for more sleep that's focused on. This time, we see that he's actually stuck in bed. And that gets us to the fifth mark. The fifth mark of a sluggard, the sluggard idolizes immediate pleasures. The sluggard idolizes immediate pleasures. Look at verse 14 in chapter 26. As the door turns on its hinges, so does the sluggard on his bed. Now again, this is back-to-back funny pictures. This is meant to be comical so that you don't forget it. You just see this guy flopping around on his bed like a hinge, just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. The sluggard is not just in love with sleep. The sluggard at this point is enslaved to it. You could say he's hinged to his bed. Whatever moment there is for him, where he's moving, he's giving energy, he's doing something, it isn't movement that actually gets him anywhere though. You can swing the door all around, swing it back and forth, slam it shut, softly bring it open. But no matter what the movement is, the hinge is right there. The door's not going anywhere. And that's the picture of the sluggard here. The sluggard is like the door hinge. All his talk, all his commotion, it gets him nowhere. He's made an idol out of immediate pleasures. And that is ruining him. Just listen to Proverbs 21:17. Listen to this. He who loves pleasure will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich. Now again, I want to be very clear. This is not condemning pleasure. It's not condemning the pursuit of pleasure. It is pointing out that pleasure can be pursued in a way that it's an idol that destroys you. The proverb is showing that there's a way you can love pleasurable things at the expense of life's responsibilities. The sluggard has taken good things, pleasure, oil, wine, and he's turned them into little gods that he will serve at the expense of the one true God's glory. Those are called idols, and they are now his master. He's their slave. Again, it's not the thing itself that's the problem. The pleasure is not the problem. The sleep's not the problem. The oil, the wine, none of that is the problem. The problem is the way he treats those things. I want to show you this back in Proverbs 20. Go back in Proverbs 20. I want you to see a verse that came just to my attention this week in a different way. Obviously, there's verses you read over and over again, but depending on what you're studying, what you're thinking, they strike you in a different way. It's a verse that my family has heard about this week as I've tried to think through these things. And I just want to go ahead and tell you, as brutal as you think this study might be right now, I'm preaching this with both the Lord and my family present. Doctrinal sermons are very easy for me in the sense of, yeah, just hold me accountable to the Trinity. Easy, right? But when I say things like don't hit the snooze button, I live with people who hear the alarm go off, right? I live with people who expect me to live this way. The Lord and my family actually expects me to be a Christian. It's unfair, but that's the life that I live. So I want you to join this painful process with me. Proverbs 20, verse 13. Notice the contrast. Do not love sleep, lest you become poor. Open your eyes and you will be satisfied with food. Again, notice, it doesn't say do not sleep. That would be unbiblical. You're a creature. You need sleep. God intentionally gave six and one. That was, he wasn't making fun of, poking fun at people needing to rest. We're creatures that need to rest. But what we see here is it says, do not love sleep. The point is a preoccupation and idolizing of what would otherwise be good. He says, don't love sleep. Instead, what should you do? Open your eyes. The point, again, seems to be when it's time to get up, get up. Not when you feel like it, get up. Don't wait until you feel rested to get up. Learn to live your life based on responsibilities, not feelings. This is such a hard lesson for us to hang on to. Again, I'll be honest with you for a second. I not that I lie to you other times, but I really can't remember in my almost 10 years of being here where I've just been thrilled about waking up at 5 a.m. to be at Ironman for 6 a.m. And so it's funny when people go, yeah, I'm just so tired in the morning. It's like, yep, me too. All right. Well, it's just so early. Yep, for everybody. The universal thing. 5 a.m. is early for everybody. And I get to where sometimes people will say, well, you look tired. It's like, I am. It's like, thanks. It's usually, it doesn't help people wake up when you tell them they look tired. But it's a common thing we say. It's concern usually. But my point is, if I just live my life based on how I felt, I would not wake up at 5 a.m. I can promise you that. I don't have a single time, even when I'm hunting or whatever, I don't know where 4:30 rolls around or 5 rolls around. I'm like, man, I can't wait to get up. Now, maybe you're different. Maybe that's the way it is for you. So instead, I'm having to take this proverb to heart. I've got to learn to live my life based on responsibilities, not feelings. Based on wisdom, not feelings. Based on what God says is good for me, not feelings. Otherwise, I'm going to take good things like rest or sleep or vacation, entertainment, and I'm going to make idols out of them, so I'm serving them rather than the God who actually made me. Doing this is always going to lead us to this sixth mark of a sluggard. The sluggard makes life harder than necessary. The sluggard makes life harder than necessary. For this, turn back to chapter 15. Turn back to chapter 15. Here's one of the benefits of you actually being in church to hear a sermon. I know you can hear them online, but no one knows you heard it online. This morning, everyone around knows you heard the same thing they heard. So we're all in this together. But the sluggard makes life harder than necessary. Chapter 15, verse 19. Notice this. The way of the sluggard is a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway. Now again, this one's a little difficult because we don't know, is this a hedge of thorns that hems the sluggard in and he just can't go anywhere? It's hard to get through a hedge of thorns, right? Or is this a hedge of thorns that lines his way so that as he's going forward, it's just harder and more difficult? But again, either one's an option. The point is the same. Life in a fallen world is hard. It's harder when you're a sluggard. Life in the sluggard's way is like his field. It's overgrown with thorns. The reason it's overgrown with thorns, notice, is not because he planted thorns. It's because he neglected to take care of the thorns. He neglected to do the little things along the way, and so the thorns took over. The sluggard didn't ruin his field on purpose by going out and sowing thorns, like I said. He simply just didn't do the work it took to get rid of them. He allowed them to grow unopposed. Then before you know it, they've made a ruin of his field. His life is difficult and painful. Again, I don't remember who said it, but at some point in this week I came across this. It says, whenever we allow the sluggard to grasp our hand, we not only pause from good work, but we produce weeds. Whenever we allow the sluggard to grasp our hand, we not only pause from good work, but we produce weeds. So this is a biblical way to say at no point are you truly doing nothing. Hey, what are you doing? Nothing. I get what we mean by that. But biblically, that's actually not true. If you're not actively pursuing your responsibilities in life, you are allowing the thorns to take over. You're neglecting the good work you should be doing, and you're allowing the work of thorns to be grown to go unopposed. Therefore, the sluggard makes his life harder than necessary. And one of the difficulties that he runs into is found in the seventh mark of a sluggard. The sluggard disappoints those depending on him. Go back to chapter 10. The sluggard disappoints those depending on him. The sluggard disappoints those depending on him. Chapter 10, verse 26. Like vinegar to the teeth and like smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to those who send him. Now in the Bible, vinegar is soured wine. It was painful to drink, especially if you had dental problems, obviously. The most obvious point is it would be disappointing because the soured wine, from what I was able to find, didn't look different. So you would pick it up expecting it to be wine and you'd drink it and it would hit you. And you'd be severely disappointed. You would have certain expectations, but then be left with shock and hurt. The same thing with smoke. When you make a fire, you obviously want to warm something. You want to see something. You want to cook something, whatever the fire may be for. You have a goal that you have in mind, but if all it does is produce smoke, then it ruins the whole experience. You're not getting to the goal you've intended. It's disappointing is the summary I would give you. And so both the soured wine and the smoke show hopes being dashed. Rather than pleasure and warmth, your teeth hurt and your eyes are watering. This is the way that Solomon illustrates the result of trusting the sluggard. Someone foolishly trusted the sluggard, sent him to do something, and it didn't get accomplished. Their hopes were dashed because the sluggard neglected his work. The same result comes as if the person had just opposed his work altogether. To entrust something to me and then due to sinful neglect I don't do it is the same product as if I just said, no, I hate that idea. This is Proverbs 18:9. Listen, he also who is slack in his work is a brother to him who destroys. The sluggard and the destroyer are related. Why? Neither follows through with your plans. You use the illustration, someone at work tells you, can you go make a copy? And say, okay. And you never make the copy. You just get distracted. Facebook's not going to check itself. I haven't checked MySpace in years. I wonder what's going on there. You just find all sorts of reasons to not do it. That's the same result as if you had just taken a baseball bat to the copier and said, nope, boom, and just broke the copier. Both instances leave him with no copies made. This is the point of Proverbs 18:9. You're a brother to the destroyer when you're a sluggard. It's a warning to those directly who depend on the sluggard. So again, the lesson here is if you're hiring, don't hire a sluggard. If you're marrying, don't marry a sluggard. If you're befriending, don't befriend a sluggard. But again, directly, we could also say it's applying to the sluggard. You've got to realize what you're doing to people when you are a sluggard. What you're doing to your boss, your employees, what you're doing to your community, what you're doing to your spouse, what you're doing to your kids. Those people depend on you to be diligent. And when you're not, you harm them. Again, you need to know that you're having the opposite effect of what you were created to have. You were created to be a blessing. Instead, you're a curse. You were created to give the pleasurable experience of good wine. You were created to give the blessing of light and heat from a fire. And yet, they're just left with vinegar and smoke. Again, your being a blessing is tied to diligence in your life. So the second mark of a sluggard is they disappoint those depending on them. The eighth mark of a sluggard is the sluggard is crippled by pride. Go to chapter 26 again. We could have just done chapter 26 altogether, but it was more fun this way. Chapter 26, verse 13, the sluggard is crippled by pride. The sluggard says, verse 13, there is a fierce lion in the road. A lion is among the streets. Drop to verse 16. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can respond with a discreet answer. So here we see that one of the more, in my memory, the funniest picture or the most obvious, ridiculous picture here is this ability to come up with these excuses, right? So, I didn't Google how many attacks from lions happen in Israel. I'm assuming it's less than two. I don't know. Besides special events that happen. But this kind of excuse would just be absolutely ridiculous. But you've got to see here that the excuse is believed by the sluggard. This is not something he's saying while smirking. The sluggard says this, and the seven wise people who correct him on it are deemed to be fools. Why? Because the sluggard, his excuse may be ridiculous, but he's wise in his own eyes. He believes this is the right way to live. So you think about it. If a lion was roaming the streets, it would be a terrible idea to go trade in the market, right? I mean, if a lion was roaming around the corner, it'd be a bad idea to go in that street. So the sluggard gives this reason where now he's the wise one for not working. Actually, you guys are the fools. You guys demanding that I get up, you're foolish because you're the ones putting yourself at risk. I'm the safe one here. This is the way he twists it. This is the way that he turns reality in his own thinking. It's a painful lesson to show just how far we'll go to protect our sin. The sluggard twists what he thinks is true just so he can stay wise in his own eyes. The sluggard's commitment to truth is sacrificed on his idol of rest. And even if those seven otherwise wise men would come in and correct him, he won't listen because in his understanding, he's wise, they're foolish. Therefore, the sluggard is always wiser. He's always the exception. Because of this, he has an ability to spin your head with all kinds of reasons why his laziness is actually a wise thing to do. This is why I said he's crippled by pride. The pride is a part of what's hinged him to the bed. His pride has left him where he won't go to work. He won't get out of bed. He thinks it's wise to keep his hand in the dish. He thinks it's wise to stay in bed. So the sluggard, again, mark number 8, is crippled by pride, leading us lastly, the ninth mark, the sluggard is a beggar, not a contributor. The sluggard is a beggar, not a contributor. And this is just kind of the culmination of all these things on his life. Go back to chapter 13. We've seen all these things that a sluggard is, but it ends up affecting him this way. Chapter 13, we'll be in a few different verses for this one, but we'll start in 13. Look at verse 4. Proverbs 13, verse 4, the soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, but the soul of the diligent is enriched. Again, it's not that the sluggard lacks desires for things to be different. It's not that the sluggard says, I just like being hungry. That's why I don't pull my hand out of the bowl. The sluggard has desires. I wish things were different. I wish I was full. I wish my field was taken care of. The sluggard has these desires. But he gets nothing. He lives unsatisfied. Because in order to be enriched, according to Proverbs 13:4, It requires diligence. Sluggard doesn't have that. The sluggard may hate his lot in life, but again, as I told you before, you know what he hates more than that? Working. So Proverbs 13:4 promises he'll get nothing. He will live unsatisfied, which is one of the reasons you heard earlier in 2 Thessalonians 3, when Paul said to not associate with them, when Paul said not to feed them. You know, if you don't work, you don't eat. Obviously, Paul is talking about people unwilling to work, not unable to work. There's a difference there. But Paul says, don't help them. Don't feed them. Don't take away that thing in them that's meant to drive them to go work more, especially in the culture in Proverbs where your survival was way more directly tied to your willingness to work. If you didn't work, you didn't eat, you died. That was kind of the direct connection there. So Paul says, don't feed them. If you don't work, you don't eat. Taking care of the sluggard otherwise will remove some of the motivation God uses for his change. The hunger pains they experience with their hand in the bowl are a good thing. When a sluggard says, I'm hungry, good. I'm glad you are. Because if you were satisfied by not eating, now you've got more problems. But the fact that you're hungry and your hand's in a bowl, we can work with this. Let's do something about it. Not, well, you're hungry, I'm sorry, I know your hand's in a bowl, but I'll feed you anyway. That's what Proverbs and Paul warn us about. Sluggards get nothing. Go to chapter 21. Chapter 21, verse 25. Chapter 21, verse 25. Notice, the desire of the sluggard puts him to death, for his hands refuse to work. Again, refuse to work. This is a moral problem. Often in Proverbs, the sluggard will be in contrast not just to the diligent, that's true, but sometimes the sluggard's in contrast to the righteous. This is a moral problem. It's a problem with the fear of Yahweh, not a problem with his ability to work. The Proverbs are clear. When you have an unwillingness to work, you will suffer. And again, that work can be in anything in life. Any area of your life where you're unwilling to do what's necessary, unwilling to do what you're responsible to do, that unwillingness will harm you. Go back to chapter 20, look at verse 4. Chapter 20, look at verse 4. The sluggard does not plow from winter on, so he begs during the harvest and has nothing to eat. The sluggard does not plow from winter on, so he begs during the harvest and has nothing to eat. Again, his short-sightedness. We saw this with the ant earlier. The sluggard refuses to plow in winter. It's cold. I know, it's winter. I'm tired. I know, we all are. He lives his life based on feelings, not responsibilities. So when winter is here, he's supposed to be getting ready for the harvest that will come. He doesn't, so when harvest comes, he's got nothing. So what is he forced to do? He's forced to beg during harvest. Rather than being someone who labors and therefore has something to give, he's now, due to his laziness, left with lack, and he begs. This is what it means when it says that want and poverty will come upon you like you're being attacked in Proverbs 6. Again, due to his pride, the sluggard doesn't see it coming. The sluggard's the one that lives this way and says, man, I just have all the worst luck in the world. No, the harvest was terrible this year. It's like, well, what'd you do to help harvest? Nothing. I just don't understand why it's so bad. Again, they're blind to this. And so it comes upon them, overpowers them, and they're left with nothing. They become a taker, a beggar, not a contributor. This is the last mark of the sluggard. It's a beggar. That wraps up what I'm calling the, you know, observe a sluggard section. We see nine marks of a sluggard, but in closing, I want to go from observing a sluggard to helping a sluggard. You know, it's one thing for the doctor to tell you, here's your 14 problems, have a good day. So, well, I'd like to have some help here. Could you help me know how to remedy these problems? So I want to end with some ideas just on helping the sluggard. And of course, I begin with the idea of sluggards who are outside of Christ. There are sluggards in this room right now who are not Christians. And so you need to hear what God says to you about your sluggishness, your laziness, outside of Christ. The task of the sluggard in that situation is first and foremost to come to Christ. Hear God's word about your sin and its heinousness and how much it hurts you, hurts others, God hates it, and use that as fuel to go to Christ to be forgiven. Jesus says that he came to redeem sinners. Jesus came to live a life of diligence that we don't. He came to die under wrath that we deserve as sluggards. And so again, I said this at the beginning, being a sluggard may not be that big a deal to us, but that's one of the reasons Christ died. God hates it. And so my prayer is that God would use these passages to open your eyes to your need of him, to see how heinous your sin is. Again, there are 1,000 other reasons to come to Christ for other sins. We don't usually hone in on this one of laziness. There will be people who go to hell because they're lazy. And this is what the first warning should be. To those outside of Christ, come to him. See the danger you're in without Christ. A day is coming where God will hold you accountable for everything he's entrusted to you. He'll require an account for everything that has potential to give him glory. He'll require you to give an account for your intentional, willful laziness. That is what I'm hoping will wake us up this morning. I pray that God will use that to cause more people to come to Christ, to find forgiveness in him, to rest in the fact that Christ is the diligent Savior. Christ is the one whose righteousness I need because I've got no hope for mine on my own. If I just took the issue of laziness, I would go to hell, much less all the other sins I deal with. So come to Christ and live. That is the help for those outside of Christ. To know that no amount of diligent New Year's Eve solutions will ever rid you of your problem of sin. So you come to Christ and live. Again, for those in Christ, our fight against sluggishness, laziness is different. We do that as redeemed people. We do that as forgiven people. And for us, we have to remember to go back to the beginning. Don't absorb your culture's view of work that says work is a product of the fall. There's actually an article written, I forget where it was and when it was, but there's an article written where a biblical argument was made for work being a product of the fall. That's just an inability to read their Bible. First of all, you have God working on the first 6 days, right? He creates. He rested on the seventh. His work was complete. You also have God commanding Adam in the garden before the fall to work. Work is not a product of the fall. Work is God-given and it honors and glorifies him and it's good for us. What we do see is in Genesis 3, the fall causes work to be cursed. So now work is harder. Work in and of itself is not bad, but work is harder due to sin. That hard work will be helped if we would implement things like Proverbs, as we've tried to do through the series so far. And so it was God who worked. It was God who commanded work. It's God who's glorified with work. Work is not the problem. It's made harder from sin, but it is not sinful. Again, we've got to remember that Paul commanded, everything you do be done to the glory of God. That was directly applied to work with the Colossians verse. So in the Colossians passage, he's speaking to slaves. A lot of that with the financial slavery and things like that. There is some equivalent way to bring it forward into our modern employment. So clearly, he's focusing in on at work, do everything for the glory of God. But in 1 Corinthians 10, he broadens it to eating and drinking. Even your chewing should glorify God. So you got to learn to rid yourself of this unhelpful dichotomy of spiritual and secular work. I'm not saying those terms are completely unhelpful. What I am saying is if they cause you to think some parts of your life don't matter to God, that is sinful. There is no task or part of your life that's so small that it can't be used to glorify God. Again, there is no task or part of your life that is so small that it can't be used to glorify God. So you've got to see all of your life as a way to glorify God. The way that you are an employee, the way that you manage your sleep, the way that you pursue relationships, the way you read books, whatever you do, Paul says twice, do all to the glory of God, which will also be helped if you can learn to see all you do in life as a means to fulfill the two great commandments. Remember, Jesus was pressed, what's the greatest commandment? He says the first is love the Lord your God. The second is to love your neighbor. And so in everything, if I'm going to glorify God, my primary focus has to be in everything, I'm going to love God and serve others. This is how we bring glory to God in everything we do, with diligence. If you're a mechanic, your work helps people to thank God for your service, and it helps them travel safely down the road. If you mop floors for a restaurant, I mean, how aggravated are you when you go into a restaurant and stick to the floor, right? You should, if you're in the South, go to Waffle House. You'll see what I'm talking about. It's gross. So you glorify God by mopping well, and you help the customer enjoy their experience that serves them, and they glorify God because you did a good job. Even something like changing diapers or preaching sermons, running for public office, starting conversations, literally whatever you do, it's all to be done to God's glory, and you'll do that as you think above your own needs to what is good for God's glory and good for others. This is what will help you fight laziness and honor the Lord in all of life. It'll help you fulfill literally the main purpose for which you exist. It'll help you fulfill one of the primary reasons you were saved. Now again, your diligence in loving God and loving others is not what caused God to save you. That is not the order I'm trying to give you. What I am saying is God saved you to make you diligent in those things. Titus 2:14 says God saved you to purify for himself a people for his own possession. Listen to the last part. Zealous for good works. Not just people who will do good works, but people who are zealous. They love and they're enthusiastic about good works. This is God's will for your life. So we take the passages that we covered. We memorize them. We apply them. We quote them to ourselves. We pray for God to change our heart so that what we know from Scripture is the right thing to do. God, please change my heart so that it's also what I want to do. Like Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 says, in all your ways, know God. That is his will for us in Christ. Let's pray.